Imagine sitting in a dark, crowded theater, you know. You got your popcorn, the bass is rumbling so hard you can like feel it in your
Oh,
teeth.
yeah, the best feeling.
Right. And you're surrounded by hundreds of strangers, and you all share this massive collective gasp at the spectacle on screen. I mean, usually we go to the movies for that shared
We
connection.
do, yeah. It's a totally communal thing.
But looking at this massive compilation of 2026 movie trailer transcripts that we pulled from KinoCheck, a totally different picture is emerging. Like, the biggest trend for you to watch out for isn't about bringing people together at all.
Not even a little bit. It's actually kind of jarring when you look at it all together.
Exactly. It's taking these massive world-ending events and pushing us into the deeply isolating, lonely shoes of just one single person who has to bear the weight of it all.
It is a really striking pivot. I mean, we are clearly moving away from the sprawling, invincible ensemble team-ups of the last decade. Studios are zooming way, way in on the solitary and honestly often crushing burden of the individual hero.
Yeah, it's heavy stuff.
It is. And a trailer isn't just an advertisement, right? It's a cultural barometer. It reveals the exact psychological pressure points the industry thinks will resonate with an audience on any given Friday night.
Okay, so let's unpack this. Because for you listening right now, consider this your ultimate cinematic cheat sheet. We are putting on our film critic hats today to really analyze this 2026 movie slate.
Because there is a lot to cover.
So much. We want to capture the raw excitement of a trailer reaction, sure, but more importantly, decode the mechanics of why these specific stories are hitting the screen right now.
Sounds like a solid mission for this deep dive.
Yeah.
Where do you want to start?
Let's start with arguably the biggest tonal whiplash in the entire transcript, the new Spider-Man film.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that one is intense.
Right. Because Peter Parker is historically the wisecracking optimist, but this trailer opens with absolute bleakness. He just says, "Hi, my name is Peter Parker. You don't remember me, but we used to know each other."
Which is just heartbreaking right out of the gate.
Completely. He forced the world to forget his existence to stop a disaster, and now he is just completely unmoored.
And the visual language of the trailer,
Yeah.
it really reinforces that psychological isolation with brutal physical trauma.
It's so jarring. Like, out of nowhere, he gets violently hit by a van.
Yeah, just out of nowhere.
And the driver, this character named Frank, he just stands over him and barks, "Quit your whimpering. Suit yourself. Go home." I mean, the universe is actively hostile toward him here.
It really is. But the transcript reveals an even darker layer to all this because he goes to Dr. Banner begging for help, right? Because his spider DNA is actually mutating.
Yeah, that part was wild to read.
The trailer outlines that spiders have three life cycles and transitioning between them leaves the creature incredibly vulnerable.
Which is a pretty massive departure for Peter.
It introduces this visceral body horror element to what is traditionally a very family-friendly franchise. It basically frames his evolution as a dangerous biological rebirth.
Okay, I have to stop you there and push back on this a bit. Because reading the breakdown of this trailer, I didn't feel any sense of traditional heroic tension. I felt pure, alienating depression.
Really? Just depression.
Yeah. I mean, think about it like starting a new school where nobody knows you, but instead of just social awkwardness, you have to deal with mutating DNA and saving the world. They took the most grounded character, stripped him of his support system, and threw him into a literal body horror blender.
His own cells are turning against him, yeah.
Exactly. So does this actually make him relatable to you? Or does pushing the isolation this far just break the core appeal of the character?
I see why it feels overly punishing. I really do. But I'd argue this is a calculated risk by the studio to force relatability through extreme vulnerability.
Okay, how so?
Think of Peter's mutation like a massive operating system update on a computer. But it's one executed with the firewall completely disabled. He is entirely exposed while his core programming is being rewritten.
Oh, that's a really good analogy.
Right. By stripping away his safety net, the high-tech suits, the billionaire mentors, even the memory of his friends, the filmmakers, are removing the fantasy buffer. The stakes aren't just, can he punch the villain?
It's much more internal.
Exactly. The tension is derived from a very human terror. Like, can I survive the changes happening inside my own body while the rest of the world just ignores me?
So the horror is actually the point. The isolation forces the audience to connect with his sheer desperation rather than his superpowers.
Precisely. He holds this terrible knowledge about threats that Banner even admits they can't control and can't even see. It's the psychological weight of being the only person in the room who knows the building is on fire, but nobody speaks your language.
Man, that concept, being trapped by your own specialized knowledge while facing an invisible, impending disaster that transitions perfectly into another massive film on the 2026 slate.
Oh, I know exactly which one you're going to bring up.
Yeah, we are trading mutating superhero DNA for the raw mathematics of meteorology. We need to talk about the D-Day invasion film focusing on Dr. James Stagg.
What's fascinating here is how it takes that exact same thematic burden of the isolated expert and grounds it in brutal historical reality.
The setup in this trailer is just a masterclass in tension. You have these military titans who command global armies, and they bring in Stagg, who is, you know, just a meteorologist.
Right, a scientist in a room full of warriors.
And they essentially tell him, "We are launching the largest seaborne invasion in human history on Monday, June 5th. And Stagg is given exactly 61 hours to predict the weather across the English Channel.
And the trailer establishes the rules of the thriller with terrifying mathematical precision. If the waves are over 6 feet, the landing craft will flood.
The invasion fails.
Exactly. So the primary antagonist in this war film isn't actually the opposing army waiting in the bunkers. The antagonist is the atmosphere itself.
Which completely flips the script on how war movies usually generate suspense. Usually it's all bullets and explosions.
But here the tension is entirely atmospheric. Literally.
Yes. Here, Stagg looks at data from stations across a 2,000-mile radius and realizes two massive storm fronts are converging on the Normandy coast. So he has to stand in a room full of four-star generals and basically say, if you invade tomorrow, they're going to be washed away.
But General Montgomery pushes back furiously. I mean, he argues the enemy is doubling their defenses, and delaying the attack means losing the war. He flat out commands the weather to be a go.
It's so intense. It highlights the absolute absurdity of military hubris crashing into the immovable reality of nature.
And the editing of the trailer likely relies heavily on that ticking clock. The pressure drops, the wind speeds, the barometric readings. They take these mundane data points and weaponize them into jump scares.
There is a line from the transcript that genuinely gave me anxiety. Someone asks Captain Stagg, do you want to be personally responsible for losing this war?
That is a crushing amount of pressure.
Right. He is just a weather scientist. It is the ultimate Cassandra complex. He sees the future with absolute clarity through his data, but he is practically powerless to convince men who only understand force.
So when you look at both Spider-Man and Dr. Stagg, they are entirely isolated by their expertise. They are carrying the weight of the world. But the danger they are fighting is invisible to everyone else in the room until it's too late.
That's a great point. So we have the freezing, deadly waters of the English Channel acting as this insurmountable barrier. But stepping away from that historical isolation, we see another trend emerging in the animation space.
Yes, moving from the wrath of uncontrollable storms to a completely different type of oceanic adventure.
Exactly. Where the ocean isn't an antagonist to be feared, but it's actually an active, sentient character demanding leadership. Let's look at the return of Moana, too.
The stakes here shift significantly. It's no longer about surviving an overwhelming localized event. It's about stepping up to a much broader mythic responsibility.
The trailer hooks you instantly with that expansion of scale. We find out a new evil darkness has manifested beyond the reef.
Right, the threat is much bigger this time.
And the ocean has chosen Moana again, and she has to find Maui to restore the heart of Teichi to save her people. And they haven't lost the sharp humor either.
Oh, Maui's entrance is great.
It is. He drops down, doing his usual bravado, introducing himself as the hero of men, and then he awkwardly course corrects with, women. Women too. Men and women.
The humor is great, but it masks a very real escalation in the narrative. Notice how Moana immediately rejects the classic animated tropes when Maui calls her princess?
Oh, yeah, she shuts that down fast.
She fires back, I'm not a princess. I'm the daughter of the chief, leader of my people.
I love the assertion of identity there. But okay, I'm going to play devil's advocate on the narrative structure for a second.
Go for it.
The original film was this beautiful, perfectly self-contained coming-of-age story. She discovered her power and saved her island. Doesn't bringing back the exact same mythic heroes to face yet another world-ending darkness kind of cheapen the emotional payoff of the first movie?
I can see why you'd think that.
I mean, it feels like telling someone they graduated only to force them to retake the final exam.
That is the inherent trap of the animated sequel, sure. But if we analyze the mechanics of mythic storytelling, you'll see why it's a necessary evolution.
Okay, explain that.
The classic hero's journey always treats the first chapter as an awakening, realizing you have the capacity for power. But the subsequent chapters are entirely about the burden of that power.
Oh, so it's the whole what happens after happily ever after dilemma.
Exactly. Earning the crown is a completely different narrative challenge than having to wear it every single day. The evil darkness beyond the reef isn't a repeat of her self-discovery.
It's a test of her actual leadership.
Yes, it's a stress test of the leadership she just claimed.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, what we are seeing in 2026 animation is a deliberate transition. The studios are taking characters who started as localized, coming-of-age protagonists and actively elevating them into the permanent mythic guardians of their universes. Wow, that reframes it entirely for me. It's the difference between proving you can sail the ocean and accepting that you now have to police it.
Exactly.
But, you know, if Moana represents characters stepping up to protect an established world, the rest of the 2026 slate seems utterly obsessed with characters merely trying to survive a completely unpredictable, chaotic one.
Well, absolutely. This brings us to the counter-programming.
Let's dive into the action thrillers and the completely unhinged genre mashups, because the pacing of these action trailers is relentless.
This is where the transcript reveals the industry's strategy. If you aren't offering sweeping emotional mythology or heavy historical drama, you have to offer pure, unadulterated adrenaline.
And they really do. We have the Manny Salazar heist, which revolves around a stolen $1 billion, a private army, and a moment where a character is told to clear a 300-foot deep, untraversable ravine by speeding up, and I kid you not, flapping your arms like to soften the landing.
Just completely ignoring physics.
Right. And then right on its heels, we have the Patton James MMA redemption arc. He's dragged off a fish trawler, forced out of retirement to pay his brother's debts, and has exactly 7 weeks to train for the world champion, or his life gets destroyed.
A classic high-stakes setup.
Plus, a gritty military sniper thriller where Brandon Beckett is framed in a global false flag operation. I mean, it's just nonstop.
Notice the shared DNA in all three of those seemingly different films, though. The studios aren't selling complex narratives here.
No, not at all.
They are selling physiological responses. They use staccato editing, heavy bass drops, and high-octane suspension of disbelief. I mean, the arm flapping over a ravine is a blatant rejection of physics in favor of pure entertainment.
It's popcorn cinema engineered in a lab. But here's where it gets really interesting. Because amidst all this engineered tension, the transcript throws a massive curveball.
The biggest curveball of the year, honestly.
Tucked right between the snipers and the MMA fighters is perhaps the most bizarre, expectation-shattering genre mashup I have ever encountered. A comedy called Balls Up.
Tonal whiplash doesn't even begin to cover it. It is a staggering pivot.
Okay, the plot mechanics are wild. You have Elijah, a designer, and Brad, a salesman. And Elijah invents a new condom that, according to the very enthusiastic trailer, covers both the penis and the testicles.
Which is just, well, a choice.
Right. And through some catastrophic chain of events, this invention inexplicably becomes the official condom of the Brazil 2025 World Cup.
And the visual chaos they chose to highlight in the trailer marketing is genuinely aggressive.
It's pure delirium. They are sprinting through the jungle, desperately fleeing from what they're actively debating are either crocodiles or alligators.
While trying to survive in Brazil.
Yeah. And they are stuffing these full coverage condoms with a currency called coina so they can swallow and smuggle them. And the climax of the trailer features someone drinking urine and screaming about little piss fish.
It is unfiltered madness.
Which makes me wonder, from an industry perspective, how does a script this chaotic get a massive theatrical greenlight alongside D-Day epics and Disney sequels?
It comes down to the brutal economics of the modern theatrical comedy. Mid-budget, traditional comedies are practically dead in theaters.
Yeah, they've all migrated to streaming platforms, right?
Exactly. So to convince an audience to actually buy a ticket, leave their house and sit in a theater for a comedy in 2026, you cannot just offer a chuckle. You have to offer a communal event.
You need the audience to feel like they have to see the train wreck with a crowd just to believe it's real.
Precisely. Disgust, shock, and cringe are incredibly powerful communal unifiers. The studio is engineering viral marketing through sheer absurdity here.
I mean, swallowing condom currency while outrunning apex predators will definitely do that.
It's designed to cut through the noise of self-serious IP. It provides a chaotic catharsis. It's a comedic equivalent of a horror movie jump scare. You scream, you laugh, and you look at the stranger next to you to confirm you both just saw that.
Speaking of horror tropes, that brings us to the final mashup in the KinoCheck transcript, and it perfectly illustrates this strategy of hijacking audience expectations. I'm talking about The Beast of Mossy Bottom.
Oh, the Shaun the Sheep Halloween special from the creators of Wallace and Gromit.
Yes. The trailer promises a race against time to save Halloween, featuring sheep thrills and woolly good fun. They are taking this incredibly cozy stop-motion sheep, whose biggest problem is usually just a grumpy farmer, and dropping him directly into a creature feature monster movie.
It's a brilliant psychological trick if you think about it. You take the fiercely familiar and comfortable, and you deliberately infect it with a disruptive genre.
It really catches you off guard.
Whether it's turning Spider-Man into a body horror survival story or making a claymation sheep fight a monster, the 2026 trend is entirely about subversion. You take the mundane and make it absurd.
So, synthesizing everything we've pulled from this KinoCheck compilation today for you guys listening, the cinematic landscape is really a masterclass in extreme contrasts.
It really is a wide spectrum.
We started with the suffocating psychological isolation of Peter Parker and Dr. Stagg heroes, crushed by the burden of specialized knowledge and invisible threats. Then we examined how animation is forcing characters like Moana to graduate from local heroes to mythic guardians bearing the weight of an entire world.
And we concluded with the industry's response to an audience desperate for visceral stimulation. From the adrenaline-pumping, physics-defying action thrillers to the pure shock comedy delirium of Balls Up and, you know, a stop-motion sheep battling a Halloween beast.
It's a lot to take in.
The industry is throwing everything deep trauma, sweeping mythology, and unhinged absurdity at the wall to see what will actually compel us to sit in the dark together.
Which brings me back to that collective gasp in the theater I mentioned at the very beginning. We crave that shared experience. But with almost every major trailer we discussed relying heavily on established IP, historical events we already know, or pure memeable shock value, it leaves me with one lingering thought for you to chew on today.
What's the question?
Are we witnessing the final days of the truly original blockbuster? Or has the art of cinema simply evolved into a new shared cultural shorthand where the concept, you know, the idea of mashing up radically different genres or traumatically isolating a beloved hero matters far more than where the character actually originated?
That is a fantastic point to end on.
It is absolutely something to ponder the next time the lights go down, the bass rumbles, and the trailers start rolling. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive into the 2026 film slate. Keep your eyes open, keep analyzing the spectacles they try to sell you, and as always, keep questioning the media you consume.